This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. You can now text the Up to Date team to let us know what you want to hear on the program and to answer questions from us. This week, with Memorial Day a week away, we want to know what mementos you've kept of a veteran who passed away and why you keep them. Go to the KCUR homepage or the Up to Date page and enter your phone number to be in touch with us. It'll take you about 10 seconds. Well, it happens all the time. Kansas City leaders, see a problem in town, and the first instinct is to set up a nonprofit to deal with it. So far, so good. Problem is, there are lots of nonprofits in the world, and there's only so much money to fund them. So Kansas City is trying something new with what's called the Social Venturing Studio. The idea is to set up businesses to address these pressing needs with sustainable funding, like a private business. There are numerous success stories in town. Think Canby's Market or Thelma's Kitchen. Joining us now is an organizer of Social Venturing Studio and the leaders of two businesses that have benefited from the program. We're going to begin with Jim Erickson. He's Director of Strategic Initiatives at the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City. Jim, nice to have you here. Welcome.
Steve, thanks for having me on.
Tell us how Social Venturing Studio came about.
Yeah, absolutely. We look at the same issues that you highlighted at the beginning of this segment, that we have a lot of issues in this community. We have a lot of issues nationwide, and it's everybody's first instinct to set up a nonprofit or something that requires pulling from that limited pool of philanthropic or governmental dollars. What we wanted to do through Social Venture Studios is show that there are sustainable business models, that Kansas City is a city with a heart and also a city with incredibly innovative minds. We have two of them along here with us, and that if we invest in these folks, if we invest in their businesses, that we can address many of our greatest issues as a community in a sustainable manner. And in the process, we can plant our flag nationally as the leaders in this world of social venturing.
So you want to turn these nonprofits into something like a private business. They sustain themselves going forward.
Correct. Whether for-profit or nonprofit, whether a Fortune 500 company or an aluminum siding company, we think that these companies can be set up to address social, racial, or environmental issues, and it doesn't matter whether it's that for-profit or nonprofit model, as long as the revenue streams are sustainable and they're not relying on those philanthropic or governmental dollars year after year after year.
So what's the purpose then of Social Venture Studio?
The purpose is to raise up not only the seven social ventures that are in the program now, but for really to put Kansas City on the map as a leader in this space nationwide, and to really continuously year after year churn out several promising social venture concepts that are addressing social, racial, or environmental issues, one company concept at a time. You know, we see the immense value that Thelma's Kitchen has brought to this community. And imagine if we had 20 or 30 or 50 of those defining our community. I mean, we can build this into Kansas City's business DNA and solve a lot of major issues in the process.
You say you want Kansas City to be a leader in this nationally. Are other cities doing this, or is this an idea that's somewhat original to Kansas City?
This is nationally unique.
Huh. And whose idea was it?
I would have to give the credit to Father Justin Matthews of Thelma's Kitchen and Reconciliation Services. He was the one that came up with the idea. And then myself, the EDC, and Downtown Council came together a few years back to create Launch KC, which is a platform for accelerators and incubators. And we have pulled in Keystone as a Keystone Innovation District as a programming partner. And so we had the platform, he had the idea, and then we had other partners that were able to come to the table with generous funding, the Sunderland Foundation. And so that's really how this came about.
So I'm guessing then there are some ideas that will fit this model pretty well, Jim, and other ideas that probably won't. Can you draw a distinction on what kinds of ideas tend to work under this new model you're laying out here?
Yeah, I think the biggest key is that you're funding social good with sustainable revenue streams. That's the biggest thing. So, you know, again, it can be for-profit or nonprofit. As long as that revenue is not philanthropic or governmental dollars year after year, it's sustainable. But really, there are some social ventures that are their end product is the social venture. You know, the pay it forward food concept of Thelma's Kitchen, the end product. But there are others, you know, like the grooming project that we have with us, that it's kind of their delivery model. How they're delivering a good and service is the social venture.
But not every good idea can have a sustainable funding source attached to it. Am I right?
Correct. And we don't know what societal issues can be addressed with a sustainable revenue stream or not. We're as interested in finding that out as anybody else. But yeah, some problems are really, you know, to this point, it's probably relying on philanthropic or government fixes. But we think that there are a lot of issues that we're currently solving that could be addressed in a better way through a sustainable model.
And you think there's a new way to look at this whole issue, that we haven't been looking at it this way in the past, and there's potentials here that we haven't realized before.
Absolutely, and that's what we want to see happen in Kansas City. I mean, through these seven companies that we've chosen, we hope to not only help them, we hope to not only see them grow, but we hope to start a huge community-wide conversation that we have innovative minds in the city. I mean, we have told the world that we are Kansas City Heartland, city with a heart. You put those two together, and that's exactly what social venturing is. It's innovative ideas. It's investing in Kansas City-based entrepreneurs that can solve some of society's biggest issues.
Is there a certain demographic that you're hoping to work with here?
Really, across the board. You know, I think it's, you know, our cohort is very diverse. Our the Launch KC portfolio is very diverse. I think in general, it's more of the issues that we're trying to solve, and we've narrowed in on those three: social, racial, and environmental.
Who's eligible to apply?
Social ventures in Kansas City. We want them somewhat early stage, and so, you know, we're able to actually help them. You know, some companies, if they're too far along, may not need an accelerator-type program to support, but that's who we're looking at. Post-idea stage, so we want people that are really invested and up and running, but early stage and preferably with a high growth trajectory.
And just to be crystal, you're saying we're talking about for-profit businesses, nonprofits, the whole thing?
Correct.
Okay. How many applications are you getting?
So that was the big mystery, that, you know, when you do something nationally unique, we could have had 10, we could have had, 50. And so we set an ambitious goal of 50, and we ended up exceeding that pretty strong. We got closer. I think we went north of 80 when it was all said and done. So it was a very competitive process.
What did you make of that? What's the message being sent there?
The message that we realized is that there's a lot of companies in Kansas City that are social ventures that may not have identified as that before. So even staking our claim as the social venture hub and kind of creating this conversation, we hope really makes a lot of companies within Kansas City realize this is kind of what they're doing already, or this is an aim of their business, or maybe they're close to being this, and they could make a slight pivot one way or another and become a true social venture. And so the outpouring, or the amount of applications, was overwhelming.
And next year, you picked seven this year. Are you going to do another seven next year, or what's the target?
Yeah, we have not finalized any plans for next year, but it's absolutely the intention of the folks involved to push forward and do this year after year. Again, we want to have a sustained presence, and, you know, 5-10 years from now, we hope to have 50, 70, 100 social ventures really building into Kansas City's business DNA.
Really interesting. What do these folks get with this opportunity? If you pick them, Jim, what comes with the package?
Yeah, the program has been set up to support them. It, you know, we know that the term accelerator means it accelerates your business. This is a little bit more longer term program than a traditional accelerator. And so we're going to work with these folks for 6 months. And we hope in that time that they are exposed to some of the best mentors in Kansas City. So whether it's needing marketing assistance, whether it's needing product development, whether it's needing help, you know, approaching investors, you know, whatnot, the entire gamut of running a business, we want them to be exposed to, and not only just exposed to, we want world-class mentors in the process. And, you know, the other thing that's overwhelming, not just the applications, is the willingness of Kansas Cityans, prominent Kansas Cityans, to come mentor and come be a part of this and come give back to these prominent social ventures. And so that's the curriculum piece. And then each company was awarded a grant to help get them on their way as well.
Is 6 months enough time?
I think Dr. Cooper or Jared may be better at answering that than we are. But we did want to take an approach that was longer than a traditional accelerator program. You know, mm-hmm. I think not to knock on those. Launch KC has several accelerator programs that we have done in the past. But, you know, we really felt this was more of a long-term approach, a six-month approach. And so we did want to invest a longer period of time.
So we're speaking with two of the grant recipients this morning in just a moment here, Diversity Telehealth and Epic. What made them stand out among the 80 applications you received?
Yeah, I think both of them had just a very unique social venture. I think Dr. Cooper's business and her very personal story that I'm sure she'll share really stuck out to us. And then also the success that the grooming project has had, really turning people's lives around, taking people, you know, really mentoring through a difficult time in their life and leaving in just a great spot. I mean, I'm sure they're going to highlight the average salaries of some of their graduates and how life-changing that program has been for many of those recipients. But, you know, we at the EDC view this as economic development. I think historically it's you can think of the big building being built or the big company being attracted, but, you know, helping Kansas City address social, racial, or environmental issues through job creation, through supporting small businesses. I mean, this is exciting, really, for everybody involved.
Is it maybe just a final point here? Have we gotten lazy when it comes to finding ways to address big social needs and just automatically gone to the nonprofit route and maybe haven't really thought through more fully what some potentials could be here?
I would say yes to some extent, and that's not to insult any of the great nonprofits that we have. And, you know, again, we think many issues need to be solved by the public sector, need to be solved through nonprofits. That's never going to go away. But there are certainly a subset of issues that if we have really innovative minds, if we have support like Social Venture Studio, we believe we can accelerate these business models and get them up and running and make them viable solutions to issues in Kansas City.
We're talking this morning about Social Venture Studio, a new way to fund good ideas in town to help people deal with a whole host of needs in Kansas City. I want to bring in one member of the 2022 class of Social Venture Studio now, and that's Dr. Shelley Cooper. She's the CEO and founder of Diversity Telehealth. Dr. Cooper, nice to have you here. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Tell us about Diversity Telehealth. What is your business? What do you do?
Well, Diversity Telehealth, the main objective is to bring healthcare into underserved areas using technology. Hmm. So in this venture, what we do is we bring in telehealth to replace the no-shows and late cancellations that occur in medical appointments.
How often do no-shows show up?
One in four. Believe it or not,
one
in four, 25%. Of healthcare appointments end in no-shows, and that's an average. So primary care is usually higher, and specialty care is a little bit lower. So what we're trying to do is add access to care to underserved populations, namely the federally qualified health centers. Locally here, we'd say Swope Health, Vibrant Health, some of the other Casey Cares, some of the other healthcare organizations that serve underserved populations.
So what you're saying is that when there's a no-show, suddenly a doctor or a nurse practitioner suddenly has 15, 20, or 30, or 45 minutes on his or her hands, and they can help somebody else during that time.
Well, I think the provider wouldn't say they have time on their hands. They would say they just don't have an appointment at that time that's going to yield a financial benefit and that the patient will have a discontinuity of care during that time. So what this does is it's a queued system, an app, where patients are placed in a queue based on their healthcare needs. And when there is a no-show, an invitation is sent out to several patients saying, hey, we've got an open slot here. Would you like to take advantage of it either now with an on-demand telehealth visit, or would you like to schedule an appointment in the future? A lot of these patients fall between the cracks. They don't get the care that they need, especially chronic disease patients. So we're trying to bridge that healthcare disparity gap using this app.
So how are established medical professionals responding to your offer here?
They're excited about it. What we're trying to do, since we are working with electronic health records, we need to partner with those electronic health records, say eClinicalWorks, which is the electronic healthcare platform that most of the federally qualified health centers or FQHCs use. Mm-hmm. And so that partnership is needed so that, the healthcare information is kept secure and there's no opportunity for a data breach. So there are a lot of intricate steps that need to take place in order to make that partnership very secure and stable.
So then how does it work then? A doctor has an opening in her calendar, and then they say, okay, yeah, we'll take someone from your queue. What happens next?
After that time, then the identity is confirmed of the patient to make sure that they're actually speaking with the patient that has the that's accepted the appointment. The payment information is confirmed. And then based on the electronic health record platform and the telehealth platform, then that connection takes place. And so there's an opportunity for on-demand care right on the spot.
Is it fair to say that many of the no-shows are folks of low income, or am I wrong about that?
Well, I wouldn't say necessarily low income. I would say those folks that have a lot of social determinants of health, meaning they have certain things going on in their lives that keep them from being able to keep appointments. For example, one day they might have access to transportation, the next day they may not. They might have to take care of a loved one. They might not be able to get off of work because a lot of folks in this income category don't have jobs that have paid time off. And so maybe they work the assembly line and they have to be in that spot at that time. So there are a lot of variables that might prohibit someone from being able to take advantage of a healthcare appointment.
And what I'm driving at is, do these individuals we're talking about here have access to computers to allow them to do a telehealth medical visit?
A lot of times these appointments can be done with what's called POTS, plain old telephone system. You can pick up a phone and have that appointment
take
place.
You put an acronym on just using the telephone. You have to use an acronym
for
something that simple.
There's an acronym for everything.
Yeah. For POTS. So, I love it.
But what we've done is we've also taken into account that smartphones may not be available. Maybe they might need to go to a library to use the computer. We work also with families in transition, and some of those organizations offer cell phones at a discount or free. Or we need to make sure that we make it very flexible in terms of getting that access to electronic devices to those patients.
But bottom line is, you're not having trouble finding medical professionals who want to join your system and take some of these folks to fill in gaps in their own schedules.
Right, right. We're moving as fast as we can, and that's why we're so grateful for the Social Venture Studio, the financial support, as well as the mentoring, because we do what we do the best way we know how. And so access to these mentors who are opening up new ideas. For example, last Tuesday we met with some of the mentors. Every meeting, my eyes were wider and wider. I can't believe you're suggesting this, or I never thought that was possible. So I think just in the 2 weeks that we've been working, it's been mind-blowing. There's so many opportunities.
I mean, if this works in Kansas City, it could work anywhere, right?
Right. So we're ready to take off and move forward and try to save as many lives as possible with this app. But there are so many other opportunities as well, as was mentioned earlier.
Dr. Cooper, just quickly, how did you come up with this idea?
Well,
it sounds like it makes a lot of sense.
Well,
to me.
It does make a lot of sense. Unfortunately, it's a result of a difficult situation. I've been working in the telehealth space for several years and working with some of the FQHCs here in Kansas City and in their telehealth platforms and just kind of doing some type of consulting with them. Unfortunately, my father passed away suddenly in his sleep, and we realized that he had an appointment scheduled just a few days after he passed away, so he didn't make it. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, there are all these no-shows. There's all these openings. Telehealth is available. My father wasn't able to get to the healthcare that he needed when he needed it. So I thought, why don't we combine the telehealth with the no-shows and supply the on-demand healthcare so that perhaps maybe they would have called Mr. Brown, how are you feeling? Well, I feel lightheaded, or I feel dizzy, or I'm short of breath. We're going to send an ambulance over right away. I know that's maybe not realistic, but I don't want anyone else to have that phone call that takes place. And you think, what if we could have gotten to him sooner? What if he could have gotten that care sooner?
That's Dr. Shelley Cooper. She's the CEO and founder of a group called Diversity Telehealth. Let's go to a different project now. Jared Sanderson is on the board of directors. He's formerly the chief operating officer of an organization called Epic, Inc. Jared, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Steve.
Tell me about your business. I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah, so I'm going to steal the thunder of the founder here, Natasha Kirsch, a little bit. Epic, the Grooming Project, works primarily with at-risk moms, moms who are experiencing homelessness or at risk of experiencing homelessness. And we put them through about a six-month training program in dog grooming. And so we really have a kind of a two sides of our business. There's the conventional job training side, which is dog grooming, and then a pretty heavy, equally sized social service component because we have a lot of moms who have experienced nothing but trauma since the day they were born. And that makes it difficult to access job markets when you're constantly in survival mode. So those two pieces really come together, but it really is the grooming training that sets us apart, because it sets our participants up for living wage for as long as they're able to maintain the job.
Well, if that doesn't catch the attention of our listeners, Jared, tell them, give them a sense of how much money some of these women can make in the animal grooming business.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot more dog owners now than there were 3-4 years ago. So anybody who owns a dog knows how much it costs to take care of that dog. So most of our students can start out in the $40,000 to $50,000 range. And within a couple of years, we have a lot of students that are in the $60,000 to $70,000 range. And we're starting to see a couple of students get into the $100,000 range because the quicker you get, the more dogs you can groom, obviously, the more money you can make in the field. But the industry itself, it was about a $60 billion industry in 2016 when we started operations. It was over $100 billion last year, and it's projected to be a $275 billion industry by 2030.
That's just amazing. And you're saying during the six-month training, then, you support these women along their journey here.
Yeah, so the 644 hours in grooming training is pretty straightforward. We have some fantastic grooming instructors who this is what they do. They've dedicated their professional life to helping train others in this trade. But Dr. Cooper talked a lot about social determinants of health, and we see the same thing. It's not that people don't want to do it. It's that the access, not just being there physically, but being there mentally too. If you don't know where you're going to sleep, and you don't know if you're going to eat, and you don't know if your children are safe while you're focused on something else, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to be able to focus on job training that's going to pay off 12 months from now. It would be abnormal for people who are in that position to have to survive to be able to focus on anything else. And so as big a part of our program as the job training is helping provide stability and support so people can just breathe and take time to just focus. So, yeah, I mean, it really is those two pieces coming together.
Well, your focus is on animal grooming here. Can you begin to think of other types of businesses where folks who are in great need of more stability could go through a similar process for a different kind of need?
So Natasha and I have this conversation all the time because I have 1,000 ideas.
I bet
it's hard enough to run one. So, I mean, I think any one of the dog grooming is unique because there is a human animal bond aspect. Our students pick up emotional regulation by just being with animals because you can't really do the job without the mirror neuron aspect of being calm yourself. And that's unique from, you know, rebuilding a carburetor or sewing or any of those other fantastic opportunities that are out there. I think we're seeing a lot of industries, though, that have labor shortages, and this could map on to multiple industries. I mean, there are some seasonal aspects to construction and industries like that, but the labor shortage is obvious, and anybody in those spaces can tell you that that's there. So, yeah, I think it's a philosophical understanding first that people aren't successful in this space, not because they don't want to try. It's because all they've ever known is survival. And it takes time to build trust so that people can actually just focus on learning a new trade.
That's Jared Anderson. He's on the board of directors for Epic Inc., the grooming project. Just real quickly, Jim, how can people connect with Social Venture Studio?
Yeah, absolutely. We have our website. And I just blanked on it.
Social Venture Studio, you Google it, you're going to find it, right? I got to run. That's Jim Erickson. He's Director of Strategic Initiatives at the EDC of Kansas City. That's it for today. You've been listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We'll see you tomorrow. Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.